Hi Ganesh, I work at Baloncat, and I'm an open source investigator and trainer. Okay, so being an open source investigator, I do investigations. I come from Kyrgyzstan, so my main focus is in Central Asia, but I'm also looking into conspiracies in Europe and data-driven investigations and many other things, as well as the war reporting in Ukraine, but also in Tajikistan. Okay, and let's dive into our presentation. This will be a little bit interactive at some points, okay? So I'll be needing some time for you to raise your hands. So the first question when we're talking about open source investigation is, what is open source investigation, of course? What is open source research? And some of you might know, it's an investigation where a researcher and a reader have equal access to the information. Okay, so how it happens in traditional journalism, journalists might go do a field trip, might do an interview, or have some sources they can reach out to, right? But in open source investigation, researchers such as we're doing everything at our laptops, and we're searching information that's available publicly. So theoretically, if I do an investigation, you would be able to do the same thing, okay, to reiterate each step. So this is the main difference. The researcher, which is a journalist, analyst, or investigator, has the same access to information as the reader slash listener, okay? In our case, we include the information with a paywall, being it's open source. So this can be a subscription to a news channel. So say you want to subscribe to an Economist or a Wall Street Journal, it costs a few bucks. And of course, in many cases, there is a high possibility that somebody else has already written about the subject you're interested in. Yeah? And then when we want to check out this information, of course, we subscribe and we read this info. And we think, this is also an open source information because everyone with a budget would get access to it. So this can be as cheap as a couple bucks, but also expensive as being a couple thousand of dollars for a satellite imagery. So we use satellite imagery a lot at Baloncat. It's primarily Google Earth, but we also have paid subscription to services like Planet, which costs, I think around $1,000, $2,000 a month, but this gives us an access to a huge amount of satellite imagery, okay? So there is this, I'd say, budget barrier, of course, but we still consider it an open source. And why is this important? Because when Baloncat just launched in 2014, so it's a relatively new organization, and to build trust among our readers, our founder decided to do everything open source because he really liked it, he was really into it, and then he could see that when he did an open source investigations, readers could actually look at each step and confirm that, this is a trustworthy information. So the reader doesn't have to take our word for an investigation, they can just find the same photo or geolocate the same photo and do the research themselves, okay? So the great thing about open source that it provides transparency and the credibility to the investigation. And in an ideal world, again, consumer, the reader will be able to do the same investigation. So open source materials, what are those? So we have these four blocks of open source materials categories, okay? So first of all is the geospatial, the fancy word for mapping services. So these are the things like Google Maps, Yandex Karte, which is basically Yandex Maps, Terra Server, Planet subscription, and et cetera. So this one is very, very useful for many things. One is, of course, for geolocation. So if you have a photo and want to find out where exactly it was taken, or you want to verify that this image is showing, which is showing the Netherlands and not Belgium, and things like that. So in this case, mapping services, they help a lot. Another thing that you can do is, for example, just tracking the changes. So, for example, on Google Earth Pro, so you know on Google Maps it will show you the latest satellite imagery, but on Google Earth Pro, which is the app, you can see actually the historical images. And then you can trace the historical changes, basically. You can see if some construction has been made, if the mining project is going on, if some forest fire caught up, and the consequences could be seen on the maps, okay? And many, many different things. The second one is media. Of course, as I've said, there is a high chance that media has already published something about the research topic you're investigating. And that's why we always check out what's there. So yeah, these are just all the different medias that are out there. In most of the cases, how our research works is that we are reading some article, and we see they're mentioning some photo or some interesting thing that they didn't follow up on. And we say, oh, that sounds interesting for us. We could probably do something about it. And then we base our research on it. The third one is user-generated content, which is basically everything on social media that users are posting. You all perfectly know how much information is out there on YouTube, on LinkedIn, on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, VKontakte, and et cetera, et cetera. Okay? So we use this information a lot. And the last one is databases and archived materials, so basically human knowledge of the world. This can be databases of books, like Google eBooks. It can be governmental databases of companies, like Companies House. It can be a private database of companies, like LexisNexis, which costs some money. Information from Internet Archive, which has an archive of millions of websites, but also books, videos, and etc. So these are all the main four categories where we get our information from. Okay, and Joel, are quite used to those. And here are some other four categories that we do use from time to time. These are called gray area open source materials. Why gray area? Because there's a lot of question about ethics about them. Okay, not all journalists consider the sources as open source. Some journalists do, some journalists don't, because of the ethical reasons, okay? So, for example, we do use leaked material. So this can be information from WikiLeaks, but it can be also information from leaked passwords and leaked leaked platforms, like from Dhash, Intellex, and etc. It can be databases that we can buy buy basically in the internet or find on Torrent. Here's an example of database of Russian airlines. So Russian airlines, which is called Aeroflot, a couple years ago we had a huge leak, so we could find info about the passengers. If you're searching for a person, you could see their past flights, their date of birth, their passport information, the people they flew with, so basically the people they bought tickets together with. Okay, so this kind of information. So if it has been leaked, we might use this material depending on the investigation. So I'll talk about a bit about in the next slides when we do justifying using those. Because, there is, of course, two sides of it. So in one case, it can help us to find this GRU agent, FSB agent, or like any other bad guy, okay? But there is also another ethical issue is that because by buying this information, we're incentivizing, of course, hackers to get this data, to leak this data, or we are supporting this platform which shares personal information of lots of people. Okay, so there's this trade-off, and in each case we always have a discussion if it's really worth looking at this data. Okay, so we wouldn't just check it for some random person, but only when it would be in the public interest. Okay, next one is contact books, which is apps like GetContact, Truecaller, SyncMe. Has anybody heard about them? No? Okay. Some of you might, I think. These are the apps that you download it to your phone, and you give them access to your contact book. Okay? So when somebody else, so the great thing about it is if somebody else that you don't know is calling you, it will tell you the name of this person. Okay? It can tell you right away that it's a scam, or it can tell you right away that it's a bank, or some person's name. So how this works is, as I said, when you download it, you give access to your contact book. And when there are lots of people who downloaded it, the app will have a huge contact cloud, right? And then you can do searches, you can search for this person, and then find how this person has been saved in some other users, okay? So, for example, let's say that I never downloaded this GetContact book, right? So I never downloaded it, I don't have my information in it. But my sister, for example, she doesn't care, okay? She doesn't care about her, like, contacts being leaked, or she might have not read that terms, and she agreed to that. So if she saved me as, like, sister, okay? Then, if you would search for my phone number, you would find that someone has saved me as sister, okay? If she saved me as Ayranish, like Ayranish, my name, then you would find that someone saved me as Ayranish, okay? So this is a great way to find information about people, because usually this like bad guys, or just in general, like people who don't want their information to be public, they have no say on it, right? Because if my sister, if my friend, if my colleague downloaded this app and they had my contact, then now my information will be exposed there, okay? So yeah, this is sketchy things about contact books, and that's why they're in this gray area open source. But we do use them quite often, again, when we have a phone number and we want to find out who this phone number belongs to. The next one exposed databases, database on MySQL, Amazon Web Services, but also like Google Sheets and stuff. And these are the databases that users have, but they don't really know that they made this database public. And then again, there's this ethical question that are you going to use this information when the user didn't actually know that they made it public? Okay. And the last one is dark web markets. Like Silk Road, Dream Market. We don't really do our research there. This is a place for us to sometimes download leaked databases, but yeah, that's pretty it. Okay. So what is open source? This is a source that is freely available to the public. As I said, this can include a paywall, but in most of the cases, we do use free tools, okay? And I'll show you. I'll show a few at the end that we use, okay? And this does not include directorying or requesting hacking, stealing or spying, but it can include accessing publicly available leaked data, okay? So we're never gonna like come up to a hacker and say, hey, could you hack this person's social media or hack this database? But what we are going to do, if some hacker has already leaked it, if some organization has already leaked it, we might use this information, okay? So yeah, and just remember that when we are doing a research, the results that we have will depend on lots of different factors. If you are looking into a person, it will depend on how much digital footprint this person leaves. We will also look at the platforms this person is using. So for example, if you are looking to ВКонтакте or Facebook, ВКонтакте is basically a Russian Facebook. So if you're doing a research on Facebook, and if you can't really go out of Facebook to many other places, whereas if you're researching on ВКонтакте, even if the account was closed, you would still be able to see their friends list, you would still be able to find out their date of birth, their old profiles, old bios, and etc. Just because ВКонтакте is more research-friendly and it can get scraped, okay? The same with WhatsApp and Telegram. So Telegram is also a messaging app similar to WhatsApp, but it just has more features. And again, it's more research friendly. And if you're doing an investigation based on WhatsApp, it would be extremely difficult because you can't really find groups. You can't really find different channels and stuff. But if you found a Telegram, you can, first of all, do a search on different groups, even on private groups, on channels, private channels, and stuff like that. And if you find an account, you'll also be able to find their username and then just continue your search, okay? So it really depends on what platform they're using. Another thing to remember is the privacy legislation in the country they're residing in. So for example, same with Russia. So in Russia, the government was collecting lots of information about the citizens, and they were intending to do this private, they keep it to themselves for their use, but it gets hacked all the time. And that's why you can find a person, like a Russian citizen's passport information easily, their flight record, their cars, where the car is registered, the phone number that they used, and etc. So lots of information there. So if you're looking to on information about Kyrgyzstan, it's somewhere in between. You can find some information. So if you were to research me, you would find my full name, with my paternal name, would find out my date of birth, my relatives, the village I used to live in Kyrgyzstan, and things like that, because this information was made intentionally public, okay? But you can't really go further than that. Whereas in Germany, for example, it's completely closed off because their privacy and data legislation is much better, that I'd say. So it really depends on the countries you're researching in, okay? So yeah, open source investigations called A New Genre of Journalism and Beyond. Again, when our founder started Bellingcat, it was 2014, it was quite new, and he was one of those pioneers, and nowadays it has really caught up, I'd say. So, for example, New York Times has a great visual investigations team where they do great just investigations into different matters, and they've won a couple of Pulitzer Prizes for it. Washington Post has also their visual forensics team. BBC, Africa Eye, has also done some great investigations. So here there was this investigation called Anatomy of a Killing. Just an amazing investigation that BBC Africa have done. So what happened was that there was a Facebook video circulating on the internet with some soldiers executing women and children. So there was like this horrific video. It was allegedly shot in Cameroon, and the people, the executors, were Cameroon soldiers, okay, allegedly. But the government would deny this, saying this is fake news. I don't know, this is from a, I don't know, from a movie or something, or some other different place, so it's not true, they were basically claiming. And then what BBC Africa did, they, first of all, they geolocated this place, so you could see just a tiny bit, just a short video showing the soldier walking with women and children, and you could see some place around, like the road, how the roads looked, what buildings there were, and etc. So they were able to geolocate it and confirm that, yes, this was actually shot in Cameroon. And then they were able also to confirm that this were actually Cameroon soldiers. Any guess how to do that? Okay, I guess, yeah?
Number ID in their uniform.
Yes, so looking at their uniform actually was very easy to check. What they did was they just Googled like Cameroon uniform and they could see that this matches exactly the same. So they had to be the ones. And yeah, as the result of this investigation, it was confirmed that this video is true and the children and women were executed by Cameroon soldiers and later they were convicted of murder. Okay, so this is what verification and geolocation can lead to. This is also getting popular in the non-governmental organizations, in the human rights organizations. So here's, for example, a vacancy for a human rights watch for open source investigations head. UN also has a team of open source investigators, okay? Again, this is all because people know how much power like this open sources hold. You don't have to necessarily be in the, in the conflict zone or be on site to do investigations. You can sometimes do it just online, okay? Searching for relevant videos on internet, searching for relevant videos in the local region, in the local language on YouTube, on TikTok, and etc. And yeah. And since there is so many information that is out there on the internet, you can apply it to a great range of topics, okay? So this can be conflict zone, and conflict zone usually are the ones that get the most attention. They're not, I wouldn't say necessarily that these are the most popular investigations that are there, but that researchers do, but these are the ones that get the most attention. So for example, right now at Bellingcat, we have this project where we're looking at the Russian invasion of Ukraine, and what we are doing is we are basically collecting all those photos, videos posted in Ukraine, okay? So yeah, as you know, there are lots of people who are just taking photos of damages, of murder, of different atrocities, and we at Bellingcat, we are collecting those, we are verifying that this indeed happened in Ukraine, and also it is new, it's not from the, like 10 years ago or from another place. We are also geolocating it, confirming that yes, this was like this video was done in Lysychansk. This hospital was located in Lysychansk. This number, like, you know, 5 schools, etc., in Kyiv, and etc. Okay, so we are trying to geolocate it, and then we have this nice database of all these incidents. We are specifically focusing on civilian harm done in Ukraine. And then this gets transferred into a nice map where people, like anybody, can access it and see the cases, the incidents of civilian harm that we were able to verify and geolocate and confirm, okay? And why is this useful? It is useful because, first of all, like other researchers, other journalists can do their investigations based on this data. The government, different justice accountability bodies can use this information because this has been verified and vetted by, by our staff, okay? And lots of other places. So, for example, I'm currently looking also at the protests that turned deadly in Tajikistan. My colleagues have looked at Yemen, Syria, and also many different other places, okay? So this can be applied to any country, I'd say. Yep, the next one is environmental research. Again, quite popular, I'd say. Just again, using different mapping services, you can see the changes in, in the like sea level, on the level of the lakes. You can see deforestation, many different stuff. But you can also look at the mapping services, not only with the satellite imagery, but also with different radars to see how the moisture index has changed, how the vegetation index has changed, and et cetera, okay? And lots of other different things, basically, again, looking for photos, for videos posted on YouTube, Facebook, and et cetera. Then there's corruption and financial research. I've done a few investigations of corruption in Central Asia. And these are the cases, for example, in my case, it was the fact that there was this very, very well-dead, influential, corrupt family, but no one could prove that they were corrupt, right? And what we were able to do is find their Instagram accounts and Odnoklassniki accounts, which is like basically, again, Russian Facebook, of their family members. And we could see that they have they're having this luxurious lifestyle that they would not be able to afford on their government salary. Were they also able to find their nanny of this particular family who was posting photos with private jets with the kids of this family, who was doing a whole video tour of their new apartment in Dubai, whole 10 minutes of saying, like, my bosses have just bought this apartment. And we could see from their wife's Instagram account that this is her apartment because she posted videos. The walls were the same, the doors were the same, and like different furniture. And then we could confirm that like when this nanny posted a photo from her from this like penthouse window, we could geolocate it. We could find that this located in the most expensive area of Dubai, this building, and it was a penthouse, and this cost a few million dollars. And again, this family was making around $10,000 a year on their governmental job, being the head of taxes in Kyrgyzstan, and there was no way they were able to afford it. So this came as a crucial evidence, crucial evidence to actually proof that they are corrupt, and then later they had to confirm it, and they, he was basically arrested, okay? There are also things like HR, criminal, person-focused research, of course, and historical research. And the fun fact is librarians actually the first open source investigators because they used the information that was publicly available, so yeah. And lots of also other different things, okay? It's just the ones that are more popular right now. So yeah, and what is Bellingcat? How many of you have heard about Bellingcat before? Okay, I'll skip this one then. So yeah, we have our website, we publish in English, Russian, and Ukrainian. Some articles get translated. Some of the most popular ones are our investigations into Syria. So Elad Higgins, our founder, he started actually with Syria. In his free time, he would just research what's going on there. It was like during 2013, 2014. Because it was very difficult to find information about the Syrian war, because it was for journalists, it was very risky to go there. And what he figured, that he can actually like find videos of what's going on there in Arabic, because local people were also posting photos and videos of what's happening. And journalists just didn't know how to find it. And he was just, basically searching the same terms in Arabic. He was able to find videos, he would geolocate them, and confirm that, here are chemical weapons being used and stuff like that. So he had actually no background in anything like that. He never had he never knew how to differentiate among different weapons, but then he just by Googling, he became an expert at the end, okay? There is MH17, the downing of the Malaysian Boeing over Ukraine in 2014. Again, when this one happened, no one really knew what was going on. Russia was blaming Ukraine was blaming Russia, and no one knew who was responsible for killing almost 300 people. And what we decided to do at that point is again turn to social media. So you all know that the Boeing cannot be shot by just a random weapon. It has to be a missile launcher, right? A rocket system, some. And there are not that many missile launchers in Ukraine and Russia. And we suspected that if there was a missile launcher traveling, it would be with a convoy, with a military convoy. And some people would, of course, see it. Some citizens would be able to see it and then upload it to the internet. So we started just searching on YouTube, on local social medias for a keyword, military convoy. And then we started finding photos and videos that people were actually seeing it a few days, a couple of weeks before the downing of the Boeing. And then we were able to geolocate those and then make this map. So this missile launcher was spotted in Russia going to the border at this point of time. Then a couple days later, it was spotted in Ukraine at this place at this point of time. And then we could see that it actually traveled from Russia. And after the downing, we could again find the photos and videos of this missile launcher of the book. And when it was going back, we could see it was missing one missile. Okay, and this is just an example of how we looked at it. We also looked at the military units that were near Ukraine. Okay, so one of the closest would be Kursk, which is in Russia. And then we started searching for soldiers who worked at this Kursk military unit, because same as on Facebook, these people are 19, 20, 21, they would of course indicate in their bios on their social medias that they work at this military unit. And then we would find their social medias, we would find that they were actually taking photos with a book, they were in this convoy posting photos, because for them it was quite exciting. It was probably, again, they're in their 19, they're 20, they must have been their first trip, so they have uploaded lots of pictures on social media. And it was 2014, they had no idea that this info could be used, okay? So then we have Skripal and Navalny poisonings, where we've actually used quite a few of this gray area sources. So there was poisoning of Skripals and Navalny by Novichok. And in both of the cases, it was not really clear what happened. So what we did, we used this gray open source area, so leaked databases. If we had a name, we would search for this name and see if this name has car registered to it, passport information, and etc. We would find different flight records of these people. So for the, I think it was for a Navalny investigation, we were searching for people who were traveling with him, okay, on the same route, and we eventually found some people that turned out to be traveling with him for a few years, so they were tracing him. And then, we could find their passport info, their full name, their phone number, and then we'd go to those contact books, like GetContact, Truecaller, And searching for this phone number, we could see that. So this is a Telegram bot, okay, which is basically works on GetContact. And we uploaded a phone number, and it would tell us how this phone number was saved. Again, this was a phone number of an agent, probably, and then he for sure did not have this app downloaded. But some of his friends did, some of his family members did, and they saved him as Vladimir Panyaev, Panyaev Vladimir, and FSB, Vladimir Alexandrovich Panyaev, okay? So these things happen a lot, okay? Saying like this FSB, because people usually save them as like where they know them from, right? And then we look at their phone records with this Navalny investigation, since we had a phone number, we went a little step further. So in Russia, you might know there's a lot of corruption going on, same in Kyrgyzstan, and in both of these countries, you can actually find different websites of the workers from mobile operators, okay? They work for those mobile operators, and they'll get you their phone record of a phone number that you're looking for, okay? So we requested this information. That did cost us some money, but we could find out, like, all the phone numbers this phone number called. And, of course, it would be, like, other high-ranking FSB officials. There would be a commander and stuff like that. But we also could see their location, okay, where this was, where the person was when doing a call, when the phone was on. And yeah, you should remember that this is like FSB agents, they're also people, they do mistakes, some dumb of them. So for example, they have this rule, they are not supposed to turn on their phone when on a mission because they can get tracked. And what they did actually was when they were near the hotel of Navalny, they actually turned on their phone for 3 seconds. And these 3 seconds were enough to get the location from the mobile operator. And since we bought this data, we could also find it. Okay. So let's do a quick example, which is called Locating IT Supporters. 2016, you might remember there was a huge campaign by IT supporters taking photos and saying that they are actually they live in Europe, they're in this city, and they're actually among, and they're not, basically, they're not far away, but in Münster, for example, in Paris, to spread terror, okay? So what you would find is this kind of photo posted on Twitter, and this one says, like, ISIS supporter, like, Germany, Münster, okay? And lots of ISIS supporters would do that to spread fear that, again, these ISIS supporters are not somewhere far away, but here in their cities, okay? And the open source community started geolocating it. And let's do it together. So please, just shout out a place that, shout out the details you see that can help you find out where exactly this is. Yep, it is Münster, yes? Yes.
Could you please repeat the question for the stream?
Oh yeah, sure. So we want to find out where exactly this photo was taken. So what are the details that will help you? We have a first sensor saying the bus. Yeah, you can actually just Google Münster bus and find out that Münster has similar buses. We cannot see really the number, okay, because it was uploaded on Twitter. So the route we didn't really know. Yep. Yeah, there is a poster, and this is also very important. We couldn't really figure out what was written there and what advertisement it was, but then it got very useful, okay? Yeah? Yes. Yeah, so now we're looking at the micro details. So if you find some similar place, the details you would cross-reference, okay, to make sure this is the right place. So yeah, there is a white building in behind. What else? You can see the trees, you can see the lights, I've heard. Yeah, you can see that there is one light there, two of them. Yes, there is also a big shadow, okay? What do you think of this? It might be a bridge, it might be a building, but there, we'll go back to it later, but if you look at this place, it will give you a hint what this is, okay? So yeah. We could see also the crosswalk, okay? The crosswalk here, a few trees here, and yeah, these are the things. So we couldn't figure out where this place is. So what we did, we posted on Twitter saying, hey, does anybody recognize this place? Does anyone know how to find this place? And then this German resident tells us on Twitter, just replies, saying, actually, in Germany, there is a map with all advertisement stands, okay? And then you can find it. So we went to this website. You can see there were just hundreds of these advertisement columns. So we go to Google Maps to do a satellite imagery, and then we start filtering the ones that could be, okay? Now, I'm gonna give you six options, okay? And you'll tell me which one is right, okay? Now look again at the details in this photo. What do those lights tell you? Yes, there is a crossing, yeah, there is an intersection in there. Okay. So, looked at all the details. Okay, let's go. The first one. Do you think it is the right place? Why not? Yes, no crossing. By the way, this green thing means this is where the ad was, okay, the column. What about this one? Okay, I'm hearing a no. Let's look in the third one. Oh, it might be too light for you, yeah? Oops. I'm sorry? Yes, there is no white building across the street. That's right. Okay. What about the fourth one? Oh, I'm sorry, not everyone can see it. Oh, perfect. That makes sense, yeah. What do you think about this one? Okay, I'm hearing maybes. Okay. Number five. What's that? Yeah, yeah. It's not roundabout because they don't have lights. That's good. And the last one. Okay, who thinks it's the number one? Number two. Okay, I've got one, maybe. Number three? Number four? Okay, let's look at number four then. So now we're gonna zoom in, okay? And now we're gonna look at the micro details, okay? On the small details that match. So what do you see matching? Yeah, I can hear traffic lights. So here's one traffic light, and then here's the another one. And you can see it's also this shape, okay? This, yeah, so here's the shape. You can see it's not straight, it's curved, and here's the same. Anything else? I'm sorry? Four lakes?
Four lakes, four
cars. Oh, that might be tricky. Because this is a satellite imagery from Google, and it was taken, I think, a few years before this took place, okay? So yeah, unfortunately, maybe you can do it, but we cannot access the satellites that are doing it the exact time, okay? So, yeah? Yes, the lines. So you can see there is one thick line here, the same as here. I'm not sure if you're able to see it here, but there is also another one dashed, the thinner one. And you can see it here, too. Yep. You can see also this barrier. You might think it's a shadow. It's actually a barrier. And then we have a question about the shadow. Does anyone have a guess what the shadow means, this huge shadow? Huh?
Direction
of what?
Shadow.
Yeah, yeah. Why is it so huge? Yes, that's right. So this photo was uploaded around 7 a.m., 8 a.m., and the shadow is much longer than it's in this Google photo. So the satellite images are usually taken at noon, at some time close to noon, to get the least amount of shadow. Okay. So here's just an example that you can also track different projects. Okay. And... And yeah, now we're going to do another exercise, but just give me a second. We are finishing at 12, right?
Officially not, but it's
11:50. Oh, okay. So I was at 12. Okay, let me give you another example about the overflowing of information. So open source investigations are not a black magic, okay? So we can only find what's there out in the internet. But it also has its own challenges. So one challenge is that you cannot find that information that you need, meaning that there's just so little information about this person or about this event. Another is the opposite, having just this huge amount of information, okay? So here's an example. 2017, this white supremacist protests in Charlottesville in the US. A photo gets posted saying that three white dudes beat up a black kid, and then this black kid ended up in a hospital with lots of injuries. And we wanted to find out who this person is, okay? So all we have is this one blurry picture, and we know that this is a Charlottesville event in August 2017. So how do you think we can find this person? What would be your first step? I can see the helmet here and there. So you can see this, he's wearing a helmet, white helmet. And if you look closer, you'll also see that he has stickers, black and red, that makes it quite unique, okay? That's good, so you know how to differentiate him from other people. Yep?
Maybe look at Twitter for pictures of the same protest and try to identify his face or stickers better.
Yeah, exactly, that's exactly what we did. We started looking for other photos and videos published about this event. We did like hashtag Charlottesville on Twitter, on Facebook, but we also just Googled and tried to find out as many photos and videos as possible. Okay? So eventually, Eric was able to, he looked through 1,000 of images, and he eventually was able to find this guy. Do you think it's the same person? Could be. Why is that? Yeah, shirt is the same, I'm hearing. Yeah, stickers also match, I'm hearing, yeah. So the shirt matches and the stickers also match, okay? So you can see there's this black sticker, but also red sticker. And also, if you zoom in, you'll be able to see that there's something written in here, and and this one's also match, saying something killer, maybe? Yeah, something like this. And yeah, but again, so now we found a couple of images of him where we can see his face. But again, on these images, there was no text, no usernames, no names, etc. So what we do is, we just continue searching for this person, and then eventually we find this guy. So I'm pretty sure that some of you would suggest doing a facial recognition, but this one was back in 2017, and facial recognition in this case did not help. But nowadays, I'm pretty sure you would be able to find something. So then we find this guy. Do you think it's the same person? Yes, because of the birthmarks, that's right. So, the birthmarks are the same, and he's also wearing a chain, and if you look at his ear, it also has the same form, okay? But again, we found another picture of him, but we didn't know who he is. So the next step for us would be searching for his friends, okay? It was the exact same thing, because we could see in the photos that he was always with these guys, so we assume that these are his friends, and we find if we find information on them, then we might find information on them. So we do the same thing, and then we find this Twitter account called Yes, You're Racist, basically exposing all these white supremacists on the protest, okay? So they posted this photo and screenshots from Facebook accounts of these guys. So we go to their profiles, we find Jacob Dix. You can see that the same guy. We can see Ryan Martin. Do you think these are the same people? Why is that? Yes, tattoos, okay? So here we're 100% sure that this is the same guy. We look at their friends list, and then we can see that Jacob Dix, the blonde guy, is friends with Ryan Martin. And then we just go through his friends list because we expect that the first person to be his friend. And we find this Dan Borg-Borden. Here's the guy. We can see that he's friends with Jacob Dix and Ryan Martin. And then here are photos of him. Okay? Do you think it's the same guy? Yeah, birthmarks. So you can see that he has the same birthmarks, he's wearing the same chain. And yeah, if you again look at the ears, it will be the same. Yeah. Yeah, and this is how, just by sitting at computer, Eric, I think it took him around 2 weeks maybe, he was able to go from this blurry photo to actually the name of this guy. Okay? And then about 2 months after the investigation, the guy, Daniel Borden, was arrested and found guilty. Okay? Yeah? Okay. So other challenges is that ethical concerns, okay, that I've told you about. Where do you draw the line on gathering personal information on someone? So for example, if you're looking into neo-Nazi groups, do you think it's okay to create a fake profile with some other men's like photos and pretend they're also white supremacists to get into this group and then infiltrate and check out all the data, okay? You might find it's okay, you might find it's not okay. Or if you're looking at this, I don't know, at this person, are you gonna create a fake profile of their friend to friend them, and then once you get access to that information, delete it immediately? Again, I think most of the people would say no, but still, some journalists would do it, okay? So it really depends on the line where you draw, where we draw as a researcher, as an organization, and of course, depending on the law of the country. Okay, and yeah, if you're interested in this open source investigations, you can look at our tools. We have our toolkit at this link, because by the way, I'm gonna send you the presentation to organizers so you can get it, okay? And also there is a great book of Michael Bezos, Open Source Intelligence Techniques. It's very thick and it basically has everything, everything that a researcher would need. So yeah, sorry we're a little bit late for questions.
Yeah, thanks. I just checked the program and I think the next one up is at 1. I think we have some time for questions.
Yeah,
let's just do so. Yeah, so
okay, thank you for your presentation. I wonder how many languages do you master and how do you approach languages that you don't speak or can read?
I'd say some of us speak only one language, English. I personally speak 3 languages and it really depends. What we use is Google Translate, okay, basically. So the team that works on Ukrainian research, like I think most of the team, of course, they don't speak Ukrainian or Russian. We have a new Ukrainian researcher, but still, majority of us are just translating it from Google Translate. Yeah. So that's the thing.
So first of all, thank you for your work, giving us some proper journalism to read. So 2 quick questions. First of all, how do you deal with individual and organizational security and privacy? And secondly, how do you deal with organizations, individuals, intelligence, whatever, that are basically pretending to be an adversary, like planting evidence, creating videos, uploading them, that are pretty like damn realistic? Mm-hmm. And how do you like deal with that?
Yeah, sure, good question. For our security, yeah, we take it very seriously because we always get phishing attacks from different people, especially from the Russian government. And for that one, we have our, first of all, we have our security person and we follow the protocol. So one of the thing is having the perfect cyber, having our digital security very, very well maintained, not clicking the links, not having the same password, so the very basic stuff. But also for the physical security, I'd say there's only one, not visiting Russia. For smearing campaigns, sometimes it does happen. In this case, we do have a trauma risk management policy where if a person is getting harassed or something like that, they first of all can approach to a psychologist, but we also have editors and and basically the management staff who can make a statement or who can take care of it or who can decide that it's better not to reply to this Twitter user, for example. Does that answer your question?
The first yes, the second is...
Oh, okay. I'm sorry?
One question is enough. The other two you can ask later after. Will you be here?
I'll be here, okay?
Okay, you can perfect.
Sorry, maybe
because I, this will be the final question because there are people standing on their legs for an hour already and I think we really need to wrap this up, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering if you're estimating the uniqueness of, let's say, the stickers on the helmet and the birthmarks because there might be some collisions at some point.
Say it again, sorry.
There might be some collisions with other people having similar birthmarks or similar stickers. Do you estimate that?
Yeah. So what we can do, so first of all, we look very close at the birthmarks. They are actually hit around 10 and they were perfectly aligned. So in this case, we're like 100% sure that the same guy. But if a person doesn't really have this like birthmark or a tattoo that would give us like 100% that's the same person, we would go to, for example, like Microsoft Azure's tools to compare faces. Okay, so yeah, tools basically to compare faces. If it's higher than the 70% match, then we say it's the same person. So that's basically, yeah, all good. Okay, thank you very much. I do have a workshop on geolocation in 1 hour, and then you can also right now catch me for other questions, okay?
Ooh, that's cool. Yes.